so much to cover still. Thank you for bringing us into your home tonight here at Coast to Coast AM, having an interesting conversation with Andrew Colvin, author of the book The Mothman Speaks. He's written a couple of other ones, earlier books on the same topics, The Mothman's Photographer 1 and 2, that you might want to check out. Got this email from Rob, I guess in West Virginia. He says, I am actually from and live on the street, Woodward Drive, that your guest is from, and I'm very interested in Mothman activity in this area. For real, I pass Charles Manson's house near Grandview School every day. Wants to know how to get in contact with Andrew to exchange information. We'll figure out the best way to do that. Then we'll go to the phones with your questions for our guest about Mothman or anything else here on Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for being with us. We're going to the phones with your questions for my guest, Andy Colvin, author of the book The Mothman Speaks, Wildcard Line, Matt in Baltimore. Hi, Matt. How you doing?
Hey, guys. How are you, Matt?
Okay.
First of all, I just saw on the website Bud Hopkins passed away. My condolences to his friends and family. I had the pleasure meeting him years and years ago, and just it's a huge loss. So my condolences. The reason I called, guys, was you were talking about 9/11, premonitions and so forth. In July of 2001, I was living and working in New York and walking down the street in Chinatown on the way to my house. I looked up and I could have sworn that the World Trade Center was on fire. The smoke was billowing out out of both towers. And so I ran down the street. No one in the street spoke English, so I couldn't get anybody else to look with me or sort of pay attention. I ran right upstairs, grabbed my roommate, went up on the roof, pulled my roommate and her boyfriend up there and was screaming, yelling that the Twin Towers were on fire until they grabbed me and shook me. They were like, no, no, Matt, it's just clouds. It's just clouds. And I looked back over and it was just the clouds were perfectly at that level, cutting through the two buildings as it later did. And I just flipped out. And so, you know, over the next several weeks, all kinds of strange things happened. The last full moon before 9/11 came down while we were on a rooftop party, and we saw it go down between the two towers and videotaped, and it was an eerie thing, whole series of things. It turns out, of course, I lived not only in Chinatown, but I worked in that Pace building just north of Building 7, if you're familiar.
Yeah.
It's the one that when Building 7 was pulled down or came down, it ripped off the southern half. So I was working in that office on the 13th or 14th floors and would typically sleep there overnight. And I would, you know, working late night hours in a dot-com startup. And so I go up on the roof and look at the building and I had weird vibes about it. But, you know, it was just an imposing thing. And so a series of other things happened. The day beforehand on September 10th, I went over for the first time to have lunch at the Plaza of the World Trade Center. I'd never been over before to do that. Friend of mine had called me up, so we went over and we looked around, and right in the middle of it on the day before, you know, again, right in broad daylight, surrounded by people on those stone slab benches that were out there, I don't know if you're familiar, I made the comment that it looked like a Jewish cemetery, because I'd been to Israel, and he remarked, yeah, it does, you know, it was just a very freaky thing. So that night, I slept over at my office, and on that morning, September 11th, I got up from the office and took a train to Newark Airport where I flew cross country on a wide body jet to San Diego for a wireless conference, CTIA, that was supposed to start that next day in San Diego. So, of course, you can see where I'm going with that crossover. I land out there. I get to the motel. I stayed at the downtown Motel 6 in downtown San Diego. Get there, and it's 5:30 in the morning, 8:30 back east. Pardon me. And as I didn't want to fall asleep, I figured I'd go straight to the conference. So I turned on TV and HBO was on. So I watched an HBO show on there that's about, you know, people and their lives. And at the very end of the show, at the very end at 6 o'clock, it was 9 o'clock, I guess 6 o'clock in San Diego time, I saw while the credits were rolling on this episode on HBO, my two roommates walking towards the camera, my roommate and her boyfriend, the same ones that I'd flipped out with that day. And something just clicked on me and said, something's wrong, something's wrong. I reached for my remote control, clicked over on the very next channel over in the hotel was some kind of news channel, whatever it was, and I saw the second plane coming in live. And I made the comment out loud. We're here, you know, the woman said on screen, she said, and here you can see the replay. And I'm like, no, lady, if that's a replay, why is that other building already on fire? And she's, no, wait, it's another. And then, boom, it hit. And that second plane, when it hit, that fireball, that little fireball you see fly out. Are you familiar with that at the end?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That little fireball that flies out, those are the wheels from that plane, and they landed at the base of the building I'd left that morning. whereas I'm sleeping. So you can imagine, you know, there's some other incidents that had happened, including a strange thing in an airport on August 22nd when I was in line and there was a guy behind me in some regalia, you know, overdressed sort of with gold and all sorts of things around the neck. And they sort of was just a strange vibe, but there was nothing any specific. I never felt like I had actionable intelligence to do anything to stop anything, at least in my mind. But I definitely have had survivor's sort of guilt in terms of, you know, having seen and felt different things beforehand. I took my pictures to be developed down in the underneath Building 5 the day beforehand as well, and left my pictures down there. And when they called me after 9/11 to get them, I couldn't bring myself. I told them to destroy them. I couldn't bring myself to, you know, to go back and be associated with it.
Well, so, I think again, that's understandable there, Matt. Andrew, comments? I mean, it's clearly something was going on with a collective consciousness, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. And I keep hearing stories like this after the fact. And I woke up too early that morning in a weird way and saw, you know, I turned on the, I just had that weird feeling, turned on the TV and the first plane had just hit. So I watched the whole thing happen. Was that first vision in July? Was that around the end of July?
That was, middle to late July. I was walking down the street on what's called East Broadway, right in the middle of the Chinatown, you know, where the restaurants are and the food markets and everything.
Go ahead.
No, it's just broad daylight. And, you know, again, I've had previous synchronistic things go on. I'm definitely into the energy work from, you know, when I moved out to LA and had sort of doors open and mind's eye and all that sort of thing. And I think I was, you know, like you said, I've known people, I've met people afterwards. One friend of mine, when I was living up in New York, had been doing yoga up on her rooftop as the plane flew by her. And even though, you know, whether or not that's really what set it off, she called in and got it through 30 seconds before the plane hit and was screaming, yelling that, you know, that the plane was going to hit a building. And they were like, what? And because she had that vision or because she had that foresight, she called in. She was then harassed, apparently, by law enforcement for a while. So, you know, a whole lot of people had, I think, even far, far from that, visions and things. I really felt like by sleeping there and, you know, dreamscape and dream time, I probably was somehow picking up especially intently on, you know, whether it was the planners or, you know, what was going on through their mind and focusing on that area. I definitely believe in that, whether it's resonance, meditating, you know, the Akashic records, if they're really out there, they sort of tie everything together. And so if you're sort of open to being a vessel, I think I was picking up on that. Again, I sort of am okay with it now, but for a while, it was very traumatic for a while in terms of how I felt about the entire experience.
The reason I mentioned that time period is because I was there mid to late July and took a picture of the towers. You know, I had this feeling I needed to document the towers, and so I took some photos, and I have this one where there's this weird dark shadow over the towers, and I put it in it's in The Mothman Speaks 2, and also in The Mothman Speaks 1, and it was some kind of film anomaly, but I still think it was symbolic somehow. You know, you could explain it as a negative, you know, the negative gets a little darker in one place because of development, or so that was when I was shooting film. But it's definitely creepy.
I don't know if he was real or not, but if you're familiar with that book about Ted Serios, are you familiar?
Yeah.
Who, whether he faked it or whether it's real, you know, I've studied for a long time the whole concept where science and magic meet. There's a book about that, and where, you know, just energy work, both the physical and the spiritual reality, the yin and the yang, you know, both sides of the coin. If you're familiar with the Tao of Physics or the Dancing Woolly Masters, those two books that came out in the late 60s or 70s,
yep.
You know, when the super high energy physicists looked in and they saw that everything was reflecting upon itself at the subatomic level, you know, they basically all became Buddhists, or at least, you know, on a level where they understood that sort of consciousness level and sort of changed their entire way of living. So again, it's a crazy world. There's both positive, amazing, beautiful synchronicities and experiences to have, and whether it's with mantra or tantra or anything else, but there's also that negative side. It's, I think, equal parts, say, throughout the universe, and on the planet here, we have our share. So if sort of the positive edge of the sword and the negative end of the sword of being a sensitive or awareness, you know, you may, like I said, it was an emotional period because I felt like, okay, you know, I saw these things going on beforehand, but what was I supposed to do about it? They would have thought it was a lunatic if I, you know, brought it up or was talking about that with anybody. I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, I can't ever know.
There's also that intriguing Mothman photo at 911, which at first I was very skeptical about, but as time has gone on, no one, you know, whoever made that photo has not come forward to take any credit for it. You know, you'd think that a hoaxer would want to get some mileage out of it, but there, that hasn't happened. So are you familiar with that photo?
I don't think Matt is, but it's in the book. It's it's pretty
familiar with him.
You are? Okay.
Well, I was going to mention, I met John Keel. I went to a conference about 7 or 8 years ago, and I managed, when we were having lunch, I managed to hear some great stories. Just, you know, it was right before he died, I believe, or at least some, not too long before he died. And just, you know, just such a great man. I don't know if people realize it, you know, if they just Google Keel, they're going to see everything. But you know, sort of these older researchers that have been passing away lately, whether it was like Bud Hopkins, like we just heard about, or John Keel, there aren't, you know, there's tons and tons, there's millions of young people that are interested in these sorts of topics, but not that many that are willing to go into it for fear of the sort of, you know, scarlet letter that'll be attached to that sort of research if they also have a quote-unquote serious job. So I don't know, maybe you can speak to that and, you know, maybe urge people to get involved and explore and research themselves, because I definitely would see that at the conferences where you have this huge age gap where there are a few young people, but mostly much older people that, you know, maybe they have the time and energy to deal with it, or they're sort of willing to be around it.
Good points, Matt. And by the way,
I really appreciate all that time, and have a terrific night. I want you to move on to whoever you need.
Yeah, that was a great call. And hey, man, you shouldn't feel guilty about being here. Be glad that you're still alive and around and are able to share that information with the likes of our audience here. Thanks for the call, Matt. East of the Rockies, Joey in Minnesota. Good morning, Joey.
Hello.
Hi.
I'd like to inform you that my hometown is Chaska, Minnesota, which is about 20 minutes west of Minneapolis. And I'm 65 years old, and our city park has 3 Indian mounds. And I don't know of any activity that's going around there, because I think the city preserved it. But I just thought maybe you'd want to check out, Minnesota. Because we're very much Indian, and forgive my cold, but I just want you to know that at least for 65 years, these mounds have been untouched.
Well, maybe that's Joey. Maybe that's part of the difference, Andrew. The fact that you don't mess with them, you don't destroy them, or pave over them, or build a church over them. You leave them alone, and maybe you don't have the same sort of manifestations.
Well, I just wanted you to know, and if you want to check into Chaska, it's only 20 minutes west of Minneapolis, so I thank you for your time.
Thanks for the call. Andrew?
Yeah, Minneapolis, you know, I've just driven through there a couple of times, haven't really had time but to hang out there, but I have looked at the map and noticed, I think they have a mound street. A lot of our cities have a mound street that's usually right by the river. And I am aware of that native history up there, and also Wisconsin has a lot of it, too. They actually have a bird mound up there, and there's a bird mound city down, if you follow the Mississippi down in Louisiana, the Poverty Mound city is an ancient, it's like 8,000 years old, and it was all built around the bird mound.
Hey, Andy, how do you want people to get in touch with you if they want to convey some stories of their own to you?
Well, you can get me on Facebook. There's a lot of Andy Colvin, not Andrew, but Andy Colvin is how I'm listed there. But if you look for the golden wings, there's a bird man with golden wings and light behind him. That's me. Or you can write me at mothman911@gmail.com.
Okay. For those of you who've emailed me trying to figure out how to get in touch with Andy, that's your answer. West of the Rockies, Menzie in Portland. Hi.
Hey. It's actually Mimsy.
Okay.
It's all good. I wanted to, have you ever heard of the movie Donnie Darko? It came out right around the time 9/11 happened.
Sure. Yeah, it's Jake Gyllenhaal, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was thinking, like, you know, like, it always seemed like a bit more than a work of fiction to me. Like, you know, the director knew something, or he subconsciously, you know, knew something, because, you know, I involved a plane crash, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I've written about Donnie Darko because it poses this question. If you want to change the future, you might have to sacrifice yourself.
Exactly.
I think that's what it ends up happening. And then the director was labeled a terrorist after that for some strange reason.
Really? Well, that's bizarre.
That whole thing coincided with some other stuff that I've forgotten, but it's all documented in my book. I like to keep a little calendar of stories each day, and you start to see these strange intermingling of stories that may have some strange effect on people in the mass, you know, through the mass media.
Oh, yeah. Do you know how there's that bunny, you know, the Frank, you know, like the guy in the 6-foot-tall rabbit suit?
Yeah.
He reminds me a lot of what you were saying about the Mothman. You know, he was kind of a harbinger of doom, you know,
yeah.
And like, you know, like these weird stuff, you know, like coincided with him. And there was actually a case a few years ago. It wasn't a well-known story, I don't think, but I read that like in 2008 or something like that, this plane actually crashed in this neighborhood in California and killed a teenage boy. You know, it sounded just like the movie.
Oh.
And it's just strange that, you know, that movie, you know, it was released right around September 11th, you know, and so I think it does, I think the movie has some kind of connection to September 11th and also to the Mothman.
Yeah, I think it does in some way. We joke about, another place to get me, a hold of me is at fortianswest.com, Fortian, F-O-R-T-E-A-N-S, west.com. And the lady that started that site, Skylar Alfergren, we're always joking about the Iron Bunny. And I'm not sure where that all came from, but there's a whole lore about the giant bunnies.
Really? Yeah, maybe Donnie Darko is, he goes before the movie?
I think it's a California thing, maybe, and that's kind of where it maybe came from. I don't know that much about the bunny thing, but I like to joke about the Iron Bunny just because I like random jokes. But it may not be so random to those people.
Maybe not. Oh, by the way, George, I really like that Peter Gabriel song. I'm a musician. You know, I go by the name Mimsy, and I think that it's like what I'm influenced by, you know, like the 80s music and all that. And that's part of why I like the movie Donnie Darko and talked about it, because it's set in 88.
Yeah, George, the music choices have been great tonight. You've chosen several of my favorites. Like that's my favorite, one of my favorite Peter Gabriel songs.
Well, Harry, here you go. Some synchronicity acting there. Menzie, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Tell me this: the Mothman's photographer, is that your nickname that you've used for the earlier books?
Well, it kind of developed into that, but originally it was just meant to, I was basically giving credit to Mothman for my artistic ability. You know, it was like saying I was his guy or something. It wasn't that I was trying to take on that name, but people started calling me that.
Well, so, you are sort of, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I am, because the photo came 2 years after I came up with that moniker. The photo of Mothman in the window, as if I didn't even take the photo. My sister did, but yeah, it was very strange how that all happened. And actually, Harriet, my friend who has a lot of letters in the Mothman speak, she predicted that a famous photo was going to show up a couple of years before it happened.
Yeah, that'll raise goosebumps on your arms. Our conversation with Andy Colvin continues, speaking about the Mothman, and we'll go back to the phones right after these messages on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Andy Colvin, author of The Mothman Speaks. The lines are full. We'll go back to as many of your calls as we can right after this on Coast to Coast AM. First-time caller Michael in Idaho. Michael, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi. I would just like to ask your guest about how he would feel about... I had a fairly good experience, but otherwise my life has kind of been very different afterwards. A lot of the synchronicity... just unusual luck. I mean, it kind of just ravages my life, and I just like to have his thoughts on such things.
Well, why don't you tell us what your experience was first?
I was kind of out in the Clearwater Forest, and I heard this very, very loud noise, and I just managed to get around me in time to see this woman. I don't really know how to put it. I just kind of went into kind of a shock, but just kind of a calming shock, and just kind of, it felt really weird. Just kind of went, but it was very scarring for me emotionally through my life.
Was this Clearwater, Florida?
Yes, the Clearwater National Forest.
Okay, so you saw a vision of a female woman?
Yes.
And it scarred you for life, and how? How did that manifest itself, Michael?
Well, it just kind of, everything, just things started happening afterwards. It was kind of a bad camping trip to begin with. A lot of bad things happened on the trip, and just odd things, and it just kind of got a little bit weirder and weirder as the years went on, and things just kind of, for me, were good, but not in a particularly good way. I mean, I got by, but just barely and very luckily.
Well, I don't know. You're describing the lives of millions and millions of people, so I'm trying to figure out how you've connected what you saw in the forest to how your life has progressed.
Well, it was just the noise and the calm. I mean, it just came and went so quickly. I mean, it was just such a thing. I mean, it was so loud and nobody heard anything. It just felt very, very powerful to me, and it just kind of stayed with me for a long time.
Andy, do you have any insight for Michael?
It could be a situation like Julian Jaynes talks about in his book about the bicameral mind. There's situations, this apparently in ancient Greece, at least he argues, everyone had a bicameral mind where one part of your right side of your brain would talk to the left side, and people would actually have conversations with someone that they thought was outside of themselves but wasn't. And it was only until recent times that we've been able to sit with ourselves and have thoughts running in our heads and not assume that they're coming from some other place. It's a very interesting topic. So just think about how that would be for people who in ancient times that hadn't really integrated internal thought. And I think we all have times where we can experience that, and we experience something that appears to be outside of us. It could even be a vision, not just a voice. It could be a vision and a voice. And you could turn that into an integrative experience by reframing what you think happened. Maybe it wasn't outside of you. Maybe it was something inside of you wanting to be noticed or integrated.
It was outside of me is the problem. Is it just the touch, the feel? I mean, just the feeling of all my body hair pretty much standing on end, just kind of a calming fear. I was scared out of my mind, but at the same time, I had never been so comfortable.
Well, it might be helpful to try to reframe it just so it doesn't, cause you trouble.
Michael, thank you for sharing your experience with us. I can tell it was difficult for you to tell the story. Thanks for the call. Wildcard line, Brad in Chandler, Arizona. Good morning, Brad.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Okay.
First time caller, long time listener. I love your guys' show. I had an experience that happened to me on Friday that kind of ties into what you guys are talking about tonight. I was house sitting for my mom, watching her dogs over the weekend, and the house I'm staying at is one of my mom's friends where I went to room, and she has dogs of her own. I was just in my mom's backyard. I meditate and stuff like that. So I was just relaxing in the backyard, just trying to not think about anything. And it's not the first time it's happened. I get just this image of not necessarily a Mothman as it's described, but just definitely like a black figure, you know, no face, just kind of black outlined figure. And the first thoughts in my head were like, something's wrong with the dog, like it's not okay, the dog at my house, not the one where I was staying. And at about 5 o'clock, I got a call on my cell phone from the mom saying that dog that popped in my head had died, that I thought was in trouble. And it's not the first time I've seen this like image. It's come when bad things are going to happen. I was trying to think of other examples. Another one I could think of is like when I'm out and, you know, I need to leave somewhere I'm at, like I'll get this black figure and I'll leave where I'm at and find out something bad had happened where I was, or and it's just really strange, and it kind of made me think of what you guys were talking about tonight.
Well, how about it, Andy? Could there be, could that be sort of the same thing as Mothman, or could it be some other sort of harbinger of bad news?
Well, I think it could be related, definitely. I think, you know, there's ways you could also get the message, you know, because this happens to me. I will get messages about someone who's in trouble, and I think I've gotten to the point where I don't have to see an image of any kind to alert me, because I'm always, I think I'm in touch enough with or what's going on in my head to know, you know, there's an intuition there, and I don't have to have a mediating image. But I think that's the purpose of the image, is to really alert you, you know, to that.
Yeah, and since it's been happening more often, I've been trying to, like, pay attention to it more. And when it happened, I don't know why I didn't pay attention to it, because, like, it showed me that the dog was in distress, and I found out the dog died outside, probably from the heat.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and it was like I saw the dog in distress, and it was just unbelievable. It's kind of shaking me up talking about it again.
Maybe next time you'll pick up on it, and you won't have a disturbing vision or whatever, you know, who knows, might be able to actually help in time or something.
Yeah, maybe now that's happened, you go ahead and trust the image to know that there's something wrong that you could maybe act on.
Yeah, I'm definitely trying to listen to it a lot more. It's definitely something that is a real thing.
All right, yep. Brad, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Tommy in Long Beach, California. Good morning, Tommy.
Good morning. I'm actually driving back from the Mojave Desert as we speak. I have a little cabin out in the Landers area, which happens to be a very well-known porthole or vortex called Giant Rock in the Integratron. I'm sure you guys are very familiar with that location.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
well, about 3 years ago, I go to the desert all the time. I'm an avid off-road racer, and I've been up and down that desert and the Baja Peninsula many times. And we have in the dune buggy, we have just a local intercom just so we could all talk to each other with our headphones, because the car's so loud. And a friend and I were coming through Giant Rock, which I do every weekend. And what I picked up coming across my headphones was, I don't know what it was. It was a language I'd never heard before, and it wasn't Greek, it wasn't Latin, it was just, I didn't know what it was. I just know that I stopped the car, and the most interesting thing about this is that my car doesn't have a crystal oscillator in it. It's not a CB radio, it's not a two-way radio, it's just for local intercom. And the fact that, well, I was picking up this loud and clear signal right at Giant Rock I'm a television engineer. I know microwave and satellite transmission and a little thing about audio. And I know that if you have silver fillings in your teeth, you could pick up an AM radio station if you're standing next to the transmitter. But what I heard was downright scary. And through a little bit of more research just dumb luck, I've had this recurring dream going back to the Native American Indians. And the dream was very, very profound. And I had it actually analyzed by some guys out of Utah called the Dream Team. And this image that I kept drawing was a dark figure. And I call him El Misterioso because I don't know who he is. And he has red eyes, and he's wearing, he looks like Clint Eastwood, but just a silhouette. And I drew a picture of him, and later I found out from a friend of mine who's a high school principal, I was telling him about this, and, you know, he said, hey, if there was anybody else telling me this, I think you're crazy. But you got to see this movie called The Fourth Kind. And I'm not into science fiction or, you know, I'm not really into this, but sometimes it chooses you, you don't choose it. And when I saw that movie and I heard that Sumerian voice, I turned the TV off. That's exactly what I heard. And then I started to receive these very, very strange religious phone calls from, I have no idea, it was an old man, and he was just telling me that they were praying for me. And then he said I wouldn't hear from him again. And then the very next night, I had another missed call from him. And he said, those who seek refuge in the desert are the first to succumb in Babylon. And I thought that was very strange. So I started researching Babylon and Mesopotamia, and then found out that the Sumerians were, you know, out there. And, well, the part that I'm not telling you is 1 week prior to all of this happening, I was recovering from a back injury. I was laying down learning Photoshop, and I Photoshopped a picture of me riding through Giant Rock. I mean, I had the photograph of me riding through Giant Rock, but I Photoshopped a shadow on top of me, and it said, it's a matter of time. And the shadow that was on top of me, I copied and pasted some reptilian figures subconsciously. And in the corner of that photograph is a silhouette, my logo, of a man leaning against an H with a noose hanging down from it. And I thought, you know, I didn't think anything of the picture until I got home and I turned on my computer, and dang it, it was the same exact, I was being chased out of the desert. I wasn't alone. And I started documenting all of this, and I didn't know what to think of it. But, you know, when you get on the internet and you start looking, man, you just, it presents itself to you where you can't ignore it any longer. I guess it's a psychic awakening. It's just that feeling that you have. I met this psychic, and she told me she was having a workshop at the Integratron, and she invited me, and I live 8 miles from the Integratron, and I got on my dirt bike, and she asked me to bring the photograph that I created, and on the way to the Integratron, it was about 8 o'clock at night, and, you know, I was out in the middle of the desert, and what I saw out there, I saw this very attractive girl at night in the middle of the desert, floating right past me. She did not move out of my way. I ride very fast. And what I saw out there was this, I don't know who she was, but when I got to the Integratron and I told them what I saw, they figured it was a wanderer or somebody had lost soul out in the desert. But, you know, just I didn't know what to make sense of this. So being I'm in the industry, I started to develop a little bit of a story, and I wanted to be very precise. And two of the characters that I developed were Uncle Bob and Blake. Well, they both got removed from the movie, for lack of a better word. The following 2 weeks, I went out to the desert. There was a crucifix on the side of the road, like a roadside visual. And I have the photograph, and it says, "Rest in peace, Uncle Bob Blake."
Hey, Tommy, let me slow you down here for a second, because you've given us a lot to chew on. Andy, can you give a general reaction to all this stuff? I mean, Tommy is obviously tuned into something here.
Well, that area around Giant Rock is interesting. I was just out there earlier this year filming. We were filming a documentary with Adam Go-Rightly, and Greg Bishop, and some other folks. It's basically about weird California. And the Integratron, we were there, and Giant Rock. And one thing I learned was that this whole contactee history they have out there, you know, it operates on one level on the surface with George Adamski and all that contactee stuff. But at another level, that was a real spy base. Howard Hughes was flying in there. The Japanese were watching him. The Germans were watching him. The Americans were watching him. They have underground tunnels there. They have strange crystalline formations underground. There's a huge river running through there. It's like the largest river in America or something, but it's, you know, underground. And that, you know, so you've got the geological setup for, you know, water often is a carrier and helps cause more paranormal stuff to happen, waterfalls especially. Salt content, crystals. There's a big crystalline, you know, as I said, crystalline formation there. All those things can amplify, you know, things that can your mind can tap into. So, you know, but the stuff on the radio could be, you know, maybe they're still operating out of there. Maybe there's still some. There's supposedly an underground radio base there. There was at one time, and maybe they're still sending out signals or something.
Tommy, could it be an encrypted message of some sort?
I know there's a high concentration of iron ore out there, and they've called it a negative magnetic anomaly, you know, which creates a little bit of a polar shift. And it's just you know, very, very interesting. It's scared the hell out of me, to be honest with you guys.
Well, since you're a TV guy, maybe you need to work on a documentary about it. It would have been great to record that message. I really appreciate the call. That was fascinating stuff. Thanks, man. Stay in touch.
You got it.
We're going to go east of the Rockies. Ray in Washington, D.C., for probably what will be our final call. Ray, better make this a quick one.
Yes, okay. I wanted to ask Andrew. I'm calling from Washington, D.C. I've had a couple UFO experiences myself. Was Mothman actually seen at 9/11?
Not that I know of, other than this photo, which someone, you know, took and claimed it was Mothman.
Really? Oh, so, okay. Because you were talking earlier about how it's like predestination, or did you hear today on the news that a man from the NSA was a, what do you call it? He gave evidence early, but it was ignored. And they had other warnings about 9/11, and it was ignored.
Yeah, they ignored a whole bunch of stuff. But I do, I want to take that back. There was another woman. There was another woman who said she saw Mothman on 9/11 flying between the towers, and I can't remember her name. But there are probably some other people that claim they saw Mothman.
Hey Ray, thank you for the call. We're out of time. Andy Colvin, thanks very much. Very interesting book, very interesting conversation. It's called The Mothman Speaks. I recommend that people check it out. Hope you enjoyed your conversation here.
Yeah, it was great, George. It went by really fast. Appreciate the opportunity.
Well, maybe we'll have you back again sometime. Thanks very much. Want to say best wishes to Jason Bauer, our engineer there in the studio, who's been sort of holding my hand for as long as I've been doing the program. He's moving on to greener pastures, and we wish him lots of luck. Gina, Paul, Webmaster Lex, Tim Binall, and my guest Andrew Colvin, thanks very much, and I'll be back next Sunday. Good night, everyone.